Are you ready for the Low Blows Network?
Ladies and gentlemen, you're once again welcome to the Up the Tuck podcast. As per usual, I am your host, the godfather of the Midcard Mafia, Dom Tuck. And here we are continuing our trend of star-studded episodes, because today I have on none other than the woke queen herself, Debbie Keitel. Debbie, how are you doing during this glorious lockdown?
Hello. You know, I suppose like everyone just hanging in there, taking it day by day, week by week, month by month. Yeah. The weather is quite good today, though, so it definitely makes a difference to everyone's kind of mood and general mental health, I suppose.
Yeah. What have you been up to cope with it, like in your spare time?
At first I was like, oh yeah, I'm going to get absolutely ripped. I'm going to get into shape and that lasts a month. I think I have gained and lost a stone probably about 5 times this year out of sheer boredom. I'm working out, but I like my snacks. So, you know, I'm occupying myself with lots of food. I suppose in the last 6 months, I have been focusing a lot more on kind of eating better and working out and stuff like that. But I honestly needed the break. I was 3 years, I wouldn't say I was starving myself, but 3 years of a really, you know, clean and tight diet to be in shape and look the part and stuff. So
yeah,
I was kind of glad of the break, and it kind of made me realize that I need to prioritize eating better, eating more frequently and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, between I suppose going for 10,000 step walks, 5k runs, binging TV series and films and stuff like that, I've kind of been kept going. But I'm also very fortunate to have been able to be in work and have continued to work full-time throughout all of this the last year.
Yeah, so at least you have some form of routine then.
Yeah, it's difficult because, you know, for me, you know, I was kind of in a situation, I was living in Dublin and my accommodation was no longer a fit and I had to look for somewhere to live in a pandemic, which wasn't ideal. But at the time I was literally working, eating, gym, workout, trying to relax all in that, and sleep as well within that one room. And it was just toxic. Now I do feel much better now, having moved out and, you know, starting fresh and stuff like that, but you're still very much within the four walls. It is very difficult. I'm not experiencing the same, I suppose, lockdown circumstances as other people. So it is kind of, in a way, you're literally all you have is work. And there's no kind of downtime. So it's stress and anxiety every day. It's great. It's great. Mm.
So before we go into the Debbie Keitel origin story and before you started training, can you actually tell us about your experience when you're living in the States?
Yeah, definitely. So I've kind of touched on this before. Basically, I hit that mark of your mid-20s where apparently you're supposed to know what you're doing for the rest of your life, which is just not true at all. And I just completed my master's in production and direction in the Houston Film School. Nice. And they had these graduate programs where you could travel for a year. And I was just kind of looking around, you know, as much as I appreciate Galway, my hometown in Ireland, it is very much the graveyard of ambition. But I suppose you could kind of look at everyone's hometown as that. It's all about who you surround yourself with, I suppose.
Yeah.
And I was just like, no, that's it. I applied and I moved to New York. Had no job lined up. I had nowhere to live. I had an Airbnb for 3 weeks. I gave myself 3 weeks to figure it all out.
Just wing it.
And, you know, I landed on my feet, and that's kind of been an ongoing trend, I suppose, over the last couple of years. I just seem to be in the right place at the right time. Nice. And I ended up working as a producer and then eventually moved on and became a broadcast journalist.
Nice.
And my first interview was with Pete from Fall Out Boy, and it was tragic. I think the video is out there somewhere. I must post it, but it's absolutely mortifying. But it's, yeah, it was fun. I got to meet some amazing people. Like, I got to interview Helen Mirren, Whoopi Goldberg, the cast of Orange is the New Black,
Wow.
presenters from America's Next Top Model. Like, I got to meet so many cool people. Oh, Norman Reedus. Shout out to Norman Reedus from
Oh,
Valkyrie. I got
people
to
told me that
interview.
the other day or the other week or whatever, and I popped big.
Because, like, when I met him, I knew him from, I suppose, like, 90s, early 2000s stuff.
Yeah.
I'm not, I know you, I'm not so much into The Walking Dead, I have to say.
Everyone knows him as Daryl now from Walking Dead.
Yeah, literally, he's like typecast now. But when I was at a charity event, and my boss sent me with a camera and a microphone, and she was like, you know, if you meet anyone, just get a few sound bites. So I went to this event and I was on my own. And honestly, there's nothing more tragic than being at an event full of celebrities by yourself and you have to mingle. And it's just the worst thing in the world if you're awkward, if you're an awkward human being. I noticed that Norman Reedus was there by himself and he was over by the cocktails. So I just
Right.
went over and I just said, listen, I am being made do this. My boss is forcing me to get sound bites for her channel. Is there any way that I could just get a couple of seconds with you for a sound bite? And he was so lovely, so nice, really accommodating. And afterwards we just had like a chit chat and I was like, oh, why are you here? And he goes, I have to be here. And I was like, yes, same. And you could tell that he's not one to kind of, I suppose, jump into the celebrity kind of culture. He's very much
Yeah.
on the outside. So he kind of stayed to himself and then he left pretty much after the interview. But yeah, I've had like so many random experiences like that. Like I was on a runway and like half the cast from The Hills were there and it was just, yeah, like all just so random. Like I think back on it now and I'm like, why did I ever come back?
Stuck in Ireland now.
I know, literally stuck. But yeah, it was an unbelievable time, but I worked so hard. I you know, you still have to, you know, support the lifestyle, and as well, as great as it was being a fashion journalist, everyone knows that, you know, TV and film don't pay very well, especially when you're
Yeah.
starting out. So I had to get a job in a bar just to kind of support myself, and then that meant I was working every single day. So I worked every single day for a year, and I was just burnt out.
Yeah.
And around that time then my mom got sick, so I ended up having to move back to Ireland. And then that is when I decided that it wouldn't be so outlandish to become a professional wrestler.
Yeah, you started training in 2016, wasn't it?
Yeah, like I have this conversation with Darren Kearney sometimes where, you know, I don't count that time because I was only doing one session a week because I was still
Yeah.
traveling up from Galway. Sometimes I could do two if I crashed on someone's couch. But I kind of only really count when I moved up to Dublin full time, which was February 2017. So I
Yeah.
suppose I had kind of a bit like roughly about 6 months training done before I officially moved up, but I kind of don't so much count that time because one session is just not enough. By the time you go
Yeah.
back for the next one, you've already forgotten what you've done. So it's like every time I came, it was kind of like going through the same thing over and over and over. But yeah, so I kind of only count my time when I moved up in February. But yeah, 2016 was the start date.
Back in Bray. To
Yeah.
touch on what Owen Richards said, your first training session will always be like so nerve-wracking, no matter who you are. Describe to me, what was your experience like walking into the Fight Factory for the first time back in Bray?
I remember like I was just coming up with every excuse not to go in because I was just so scared and it's so ridiculous like to be like at the time I was 27 and I was like so scared that my friends had to drive me to Bray because I didn't trust getting the bus. And I was there and I was like, oh, it doesn't look like it's open. And my friends are like, sure looks like they're opening the gate there. It's like, no, they're not. And like Phil's there, you know, opening up the shutters, and there's a few people kind of rolling around inside. And then he just comes over to the car and he's like, you here for training? And I was like, yeah. And he goes, come on then. And I was like, oh, okay. And my friends drove off and I went in, and there was no ring at this time.
Oh,
I think
yeah, I
the
remember
ring
that.
was still in Belfast or something. I could be wrong about that. And I got in there and I looked around and I was like, right, this isn't the WWE Performance Center.
No, it certainly wasn't.
What is happening? And like, you know, it was dark, it was dingy, it was damp, but it was home, if that makes sense. And I think everyone will agree on that. And I got in and he was like, yeah, just, you know, throw your stuff out the back, change if you need to, and be ready to roll in a couple of minutes. I had no idea what that meant. I was like, ready to roll. Maybe he means like ready to rock, like ready to roll. And, I had an inner panic attack. Anyway, that was fine. I remember you were there and I thought you were one of the coaches. And
you really misjudged that one.
And Darren Carney was there, and there was a couple of other people. Majority of them aren't around anymore. And Lee was there as well. And I think that's all of that like original crew that I remember. The rest were kind of, I suppose, people that kind of came in and out and weren't very consistent. And I remember Darren thought that I was some like vet because I was old that came back to do a bit of training because they were home, you know, from the camps.
Yeah.
And I heard that a couple of months later, I heard that story from Darren and I couldn't stop laughing. He's like, yeah, I thought you were like some Natalia bird coming in, having been away on the camps. I was like, what is he talking about?
That's a very Darren thing to think.
Yeah.
He would have been new as well at that time.
Yeah, I think he had just started about a month before me. And then the following week, Damo and Nathan Martin started training.
Yeah.
So I kind of click with them the most because we all kind of started around the same time.
Yeah.
But then just to continue that first session, we started like there was no like this is how you do this and this is how you do that. It was like, right, run on spot. You know, left hand down, right hand down, running on spot, and it's like, what is going on?
Yeah.
And then you start the rolls, and you know you're in lines of two, and you're rolling on these blue mats, and you know you're just like, I don't know how to roll, I don't know how to do any of this, but it's all happening so fast that you're just like throwing
you just
yourself.
Go for it.
Yeah, you just go for it. And I remember Phil being like, okay, roll, and I was like, I'm trying, and he was like, okay. But roll though. And I'm like, is that not what I'm doing? And he's like, well, I wouldn't have to say you're not rolling if you were doing it right. So I just kept like flip bumping and not knowing. And he's like, yeah, but just softer. I don't want to hear you.
Yeah.
Like, okay. And then throughout the day, he partnered me with Lee, LJ Cleary. And I worked with him a lot, and that was so much fun. Like, he just lock ups, wrist locks, all that kind of stuff, like reversals and stuff like that. And towards the end of the session, Phil had everyone do victory rolls. And, you know, I had felt good up until that point. So I was like, yeah, I'll do it. So, like, I ended up doing it on Lee as the demonstration after only seeing it once. And once I was up on his shoulders, I was like, oh no, this is a terrible, terrible idea. But I went and did it anyway. And I honestly left thinking like I was like a champion. Like,
yeah.
I thought I was unreal. I was like, oh, did a victory roll, probably get booking soon. You know, I just felt so good. Like, and then afterwards, the next morning, my legs, I just remember my hamstrings felt like they were just about to like rip.
Yeah.
I was in so much pain. My back and my neck, I literally felt like I'd been through a car crash. And I got a message from Phil and he was like, oh, how are you feeling? How's the body? And I was like, feel terrible, but I'll see you next week. And then that's pretty much how it went. And I was coming up every Sunday. And then I started coming up on a Saturday and Sunday when I could. And then I started calling in sick to work so I could come up on a Tuesday. And yeah, and then eventually I was like, oh, I just, yeah, I'm very all or nothing. So I either have to not do it at all, or I have to go all in on it. So I was like, I'm just going to move. I'm not doing anything anyway. I'm only working in an office. I can get another office job. So yeah, I moved up and here we are.
Here we are. It's different for everyone. Like, everyone has things that they might find easier or harder in wrestling. Did you find anything challenging to adjust to since you started training in those first few months?
Everything. Like I had a background in powerlifting. I have a background in Muay Thai and Kung Fu. And when you're told to punch someone, you know, you don't really think that there's any other way other than the way you've been taught in martial arts. So
Yeah.
I remember, if people remember Del PC, he showed up to a training session and I got partnered with him and we were working on strikes. And he was like, just ease up a little bit. You're not going to be able to do that every day. If you were on tour, you couldn't work that way. And I was like, oh, okay, this is the first time anyone said that to me. So now help, like, what can I do? He goes, so right, you're going to punch me in the face. And I punched him in the face, and he was like, no, you literally punched me in the face. Why did you do that? It's like, you told me to punch you in the face. And he's
Wrestling's so
like, yeah,
weird.
but like, he's like, learn how to work. It's like, oh God, this is only my third session. Give me a break. So it was learning how to strike with intensity, but obviously pull it, or you know, be safe,
Yeah.
work smart, that kind of thing. And then with the lifting, you know, with powerlifting, it's all, you know, it's power in your legs, your glutes, you know, you're not using your back or anything like that. And I would like hit power moves, but I wouldn't be thinking about the person, you know, I'm doing them on.
Yeah.
I'd be just concentrating on actually getting them off me and throwing them and stuff like that. And I suppose there was just a little bit too much force, and you learn, like, it's not about you, it's about protecting the person and them making you look good. It's
Yeah.
the whole facade. It doesn't matter how strong you are or how legit you are in real life, like all that goes out the window when it comes to wrestling, because it's not the same, and some people really struggle with that. So yeah, there was loads of adapting. And psychology was a big one for me, because I like someone, like I get kicked in the back and I'd sell my face,
Yeah.
like little things like that, that you really have to just like beat it out of yourself. I remember watching back a match and I just did, like, someone had been working like my arm and I didn't sell my arm at all, and I didn't like focus on the body part. I was just like Superman straight away for my comeback, and it was
You're
just
always just
like,
thinking of the next thing, like.
that's it. Like, you forget, like, in the beginning, you're just so focused on, okay, duck a line, back elbow, drop kick. And you're just thinking so much that you're not enjoying it. It's robotic. It's a choreographed dance. There's no emotion. There's no nothing. And it's not enjoyable to watch, and it's just dull, and it just takes a lot of reps and, you know, working with the right people and learning from the right people to be able to kind of get out of that and shake that off and have the confidence in yourself that you know your moves, you know how to take the moves. Now, how can you go out there and convey them, show emotion, put on a performance, put on a show, and entertain, and make it look realistic? Like, there's so many different things that you have to think of. Like, when it comes to selling, like, you know, I'm selling for that my opponent. I'm selling myself, my character. I'm selling my moves. Like, there's so much that you have to take into consideration. And honestly, since, you know, breaking into the UK and having to work more on the fly and not over plan or over, I suppose, choreograph things, makes it more legit, and it allows you to interact with the crowd because you're not thinking about the next thing, because you don't know what the next thing
Yeah.
is. So it's just learning to adapt to the person you're in the ring with. And it always helps if the person you're in the ring with is willing to work that way and not be concerned about, you know, getting their shit in, brother, you
That's
know,
what it's all
like,
about.
That's what it's all about, brother. Get your shit in. So when you have someone in there that is willing to be a general and listen and call things, and like when you find someone that's compatible, it's a dream. You can have, the best matches.
Surprisingly, your first match and your second match didn't actually happen on Fight Factory. They take place on Uprising and Contenders. But I remember you did a few promos, maybe one or two promos, to like kind of launch your character. Can you talk to us about those promos?
R.I.P. I remember I was in my room and I had made this mood board, and I'm not like, I've dark hair, dark eyeliner, I love music, and of course everyone's first choice is I'm going to be a punk rock kid. And they think that nobody's ever done it and that it will work and that you can convey this to an audience because they'll relate to this, they'll understand. So I was like, okay, well, what's relevant to me is I loved movies like Clueless and Girl Next Door and just all these like fun 90s movies where there was always like a weird girl. Like in Mean Girls, you've got Janice. It's like, right, I'm going to put Janice on my mood board. I want to be Janice. She's sarcastic. She's funny. Okay, I want to be Winona Ryder in Beetlejuice. I want to be this person, that person. And I kind of just created a mood board and I was like, right, what am I getting from this? I need plaid, I need tartan, I need headphones, I need a shirt around my waist. And like, I put so much into the look that I was like, okay, well, it'd be a real shame, not to do a promo kind of revolving around it and stuff. So I did kind of like old school Jackass style promos. And I remember the first promo I did, I still wasn't sure who I was. I was like, oh, I really want to be Wonder Woman. And everyone was like, wow, that's original. So I did this promo and it was so staged. It was so funny. And it was like in the promo, I was trying to figure out who I am and what the perfect fit was and what kind of promo I should do. So everything I actually felt, I put into the promo. They were just fun. I wanted to start off with a bang. I wanted to start off with, I take myself seriously. So here's the fully produced, recorded and edited promo. I had my gear, I knew what I was going to do with my hair. The only problem was I didn't know what I was going to do in the ring. And that was the learning curve for me. It was that realizing that, the show and the performance is great, but if you don't know why you're doing something and you don't know why you're doing certain moves, then it's just not going to make sense. And I remember having my first match and I came backstage and I was like, oh, I'm unreal. And I just got chewed out of it backstage for about 45 minutes.
Nice.
Because, when you're starting out, you need an agent, you need someone to oversee what you're doing. And at the time that wasn't there. I remember afterwards being told like, it was great, but it's just, this is what you need to work on. And I was just like, oh, okay. You just get a bit overwhelmed because it's like your first match, you think you're going to come back and you're going to be like, yeah, you're actually like, oh, I have so much work to do. And it kind of lights a fire under you so that you kind of focus more so on the stuff that you need to do better on and perfect than, the performance and the clothes and the costumes and all that kind of stuff. But those first few promos, like, I loved doing them. And it was a nice contrast because, you had, I suppose, like, all your beautiful baby faces and your divas and your stunning girls and all that kind of stuff. I want to do something different. And you obviously had someone like Katie Harvey, who's doing the feminist icon. And then you have Session Mart Martina, who's like, a session mart loves the beer. Everyone kind of in Ireland seemed to have gone for a kind of a powerful feminine, not a feminine, I suppose, overly feminine character, but a powerful, strong woman character, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like Martina could drink, Katie, feminist icon, the queen of wrestling. Like everyone went for something really empowering and powerful. So I was like, I'm going to be the pop culture prodigy, Debbie. And like, I look back now and I'm like, God, I had so much fun. like I there was some really fun matches. There were some desperate matches, but there was some really fun matches as well. Like I loved my matches with Barry, or sorry, Be Cool. When I teamed with Be Cool, it was just the making of
That
me
was
learning.
Chantel Mantel, wasn't it?
Yeah,
Oh,
my
that was
like
so
that was
good.
Chantel Mantel versus Session Martina and Amy Alonzi, and honestly, one of the funniest matches I've ever done. The next one then was me and Be Cool versus Raven Creed and oh, I can't think of
Gunter
his
Isaac, was
work.
it?
Yes, Isaac. Yeah, just loads of fun learning from him, and that's kind of when I started discovering the kind of comedy element to wrestling. And then after that, then I went on to kind of do some single stuff, which was amazing. But I think the final time, or yeah, the last time you got to see me in that kind of character was the first Defiant show, where I lost to Ray and Creed. And then after that, then I was like, that's the perfect time now to kind of, start again and come up with something a little bit better and more me and more kind of realistic. Because like, there's only so long you can pretend that you're a young girl, I'm very much a mature lady, as they say. And there's only, after a while the audience called bullshit, and it's just not believable. So it's like, okay, I need to find something that's more me and more relatable. And that was fun, kind of coming up with that and looking more into, characters and watching movies and all that kind of stuff to kind of come up with all of that.
Cool. You mentioned Raven Creed there. Your first 2 years in wrestling, like you were feuding with her, like in Phoenix and OTT, loads of different places. Can you talk to us about some of your highlights from that feud?
Yeah, some say we're still wrestling. Obviously there's loads of standout matches. There was a couple in CCW. We were both in a
R.I.P.
position, R.I.P. We were both in a position where we knew that the reason that we were just destined to wrestle every month for 2 years was because there was no investment in the women's division. I think we both say that openly. But the amazing thing was is that Raven Creed was probably one of the most experienced girls, apart from the likes of Session with Martina and Katie Harvey. So it was great to be able to work with her and, learn something new and work with a strong heel, because she was a very good heel. So I'd say some of the highlights would be, like, as much as bad as it was, I suppose, looking back on it, I had fun with our ladder match. It was just that moment where we were both like, we're just gonna kill ourselves. Who cares? We're just gonna
That's what
go for
everyone
it.
thinks when they have their first ladder match.
Yeah, you're like, oh, it's gonna be unreal. And then you're like, okay, but none of this makes sense. So I look back on it and I just thought it was really ballsy of us to do that. I suppose in hindsight, probably wasn't the best promotion to do it in. We weren't exactly safe. So I suppose looking back, it probably wasn't the best promotion to do that in. Other highlights would be in OTT. I loved our feud in OTT, and I remember one specific match was my singles match with her on Contenders, and that was the first time during a match that I was able to listen to the crowd and understand, what I should be selling and what I should be doing. And I remember Raven Creed put me in the Boston Crab, and the minute she locked it in, all these kids were like, "No, Debbie, no." And if you go back and watch it, which I recommend because I've obviously come so far now, you can just hear the kids, and then that's when it clicked. It was like, okay, all of this makes sense now. I'm obviously like they understand that I'm going to lose. I'm not going to win this match. She's going to beat me. And when the kids got into it, all the adults got into it, and it was just the most wholesome thing. I remember like crawling, trying to get to that bottom rope, and this one kid is screaming. He's like standing on a chair and he's like, "Daddy, come on, please, Debbie, Debbie." And like I look at him and I point at him and he loses his mind, and I grab the rope and he just screams the house down. And I was like, this is why this is all worth it.
Yeah.
Because I remember when I was a kid going to these like really crappy, fake WWE events. The tribute shows. And the, you know, the fake Kane, who was a babyface, would be putting the hand out, you know, trying to get your attention. And the minute you lock eyes at him, he's like fighting up, giving it the Hogan with the fist. And I remember that as a kid, and being able to do that for a kid, it was so wholesome. And I was so happy with that match. And just, that was one of my favorite contender shows. I think overall the card was amazing, but that was just such a really good experience. But there's loads of, you know, different moments. Like, we weren't told that we were going to wrestle on Defiant. We just assumed we weren't on it because, you know, we weren't the more experienced girls or whatever.
Yeah.
So we found out the contenders, I think it was like the week before, that we were going to be on Defiant, and we lost our shit. Like we just freaked out. We were so excited. I was like, oh my God.
In the Tivoli.
Going to be in the Tivoli. Yeah, because like the Tivoli is the home of Irish wrestling. It's just, I used to pay in with you guys to go to watch the shows and stuff. So
yeah,
it was amazing. And that ended up being it wasn't the final one. Defiant 2 was.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was just unbelievable to get a chance to do that in the Tivoli before, you know, it got knocked down.
R.I.P. So switching gears now, can you tell us about your time that you spent in Japan and how that might have helped you develop as a wrestler?
Yeah, so how that all kind of came about was I went over to the UK to train with Pro Wrestling Eve.
Right.
And I actually met Emi Sakura and Miko Satomura and Aja Kong over there. And they all invited us over to come train at Sendai and Gato Move Pro. And I just kind of got itchy feet. I like to travel. And I was like, okay, well, why not? Like, if I'm going to go like travel, why not, like, you know, have another excuse to train somewhere new? So I was like, So I contacted Rhea O'Reilly, who's like my mom in this business. She's always kind of looked out for me. And I said, look, I know Miko and Emmy have a school in Japan. And, you know, they did invite us all over at some point to train and stuff. Do you think there's any way we could set that up from Eve? And he's going to, you know, help you out and kind of discuss, you know, the training, and just to kind of give you a general idea of what it's like to be in Japan. And like, they were both so helpful. And I got over there, and even just being in Japan, it was like getting off the plane, I was, oh, know where I'm going. I was like on this train, and this will surely bring me to where I need to be. And it's just everything was so confusing. So I just needed a day to like figure out who I was, where I was, what was going on.
Yeah.
And I went to my first session, which was just a one-on-one with Emmy, and it was unbelievable that she, you know, cleared her schedule for the day just to work with me one-on-one.
Nice.
And I suppose her next in line would have been Riho, who you see on AEW now.
Oh,
and
okay.
her next in line then would have been Mitsuru, who has just retired, which is really, really sad, because I got to wrestle her and she was absolutely unbelievable. I still don't know if she's retired from wrestling or that promotion in Japan. They have, you know, strict rules that you have to stick to your home promotion until, you know, you can go off on your excursion and work wherever you want. But she brought in Mitsuru anyway, and I worked with her while she watched me. And she had a stick and she sat on the chair and she'd like tap her stick if something wasn't right or if something was, you know, wrong. And she was like, she asked, like, why did you come here? And I said, you know, to learn from the best. And she was like, oh, thank you. Thank you. And she was like, what do you want to learn from me? And I said, I want to be able to do a drop kick. And I attempted my first drop kick and she was like, oh, and I was like, I know, it's very bad. she was like, you are a frog. And I was like, what? She was like, you're a frog. And I was like, what do you mean I'm a frog? She goes, Irish girl is frog. And she was like, when you drop kick, you don't put your legs together, you kick them out. So she was like, you've got one leg coming up and the other down like a frog.
Oh, okay.
So she made me do 150, maybe more, drop kicks in a row.
Wow.
Over and over and over until I got it. And then when I got it, she just did a yay! Big celebration. And she thanked me. And, you know, she offered me food and, you know, she's very hospitable. And I sat down and I had a tea with her and we just chatted. And then I left because she had a show to go to. And then when I got back to my hotel, she messaged me and she asked me, did I have my costume with me? And I was like, you know what they say, brother, always bring your gear. And I brought my gear with me. No, I wasn't like, you know, being I wasn't presuming anything would come from it, but I just in case, you know, the opportunity was there. So I messaged her back and I said, yes, I have my gear with me. And she was like, you're going to replace one of my girls and you're going to wrestle tomorrow.
Nice.
And the only condition is that you have to do the drop kick you learned today. And I said, okay, no problem. So no pressure at all. Bear in mind that you probably all know it as Choco Pro now. This is a Thai style of wrestling that Emmy kind of brought to Thailand and then brought back to Japan. And it's basically wrestling on the floor with a mattress.
Right.
There's no ropes. There's no ring. They use chairs to jump off. You know, they move the audience and jump off chairs. They jump off windowsills, like... nothing's off limits. And it's all about the story.
Yeah.
Which is why I got into wrestling. I love storytelling. I love characters. So she put me with Mitsuru because I had worked with her the day before. And we put together this match. And some of the DDT guys were there. And they came in to give us feedback as we were planning. And they really helped me put together a match that I would never have put together in Ireland. Or I suppose in Europe, you know, when it's like, duck the line, brother, clothesline, clothesline, clothesline.
Yeah.
And I don't know why I'm Hulk Hogan on your podcast.
Yeah, I was thinking that.
We're going to go with it. Yeah, you know, we'd be used to the generic kind of, you know, babyface comeback with your three bumps and a whip switch and a flapjack or a big move or something like that.
Yeah.
Whereas they're all very slow. At the start, controlled, it's competitive, you know, who's going to win here? It's like a bit of a one-upmanship. And then, you know, the speed comes up a little bit and then it fades again for a while. There's lots of kind of holds and submissions and then it gets fast out of nowhere. And it's just like boom, 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 boom. And I had never put a match together like that. You know, I suppose the standard template is very up and down and up and down and, you know, keep the audience interested and work the crowd and stuff. It's not like that there. As much as it is for the entertainment and for the crowd and stuff, it is at the end of the day, it's about the wrestling and it's the story you're telling.
Yeah.
And our story was like, you know, silly Irish girl thinks she's going to come over here and wrestle in Japan. Well, I'm going to show her, you know, and boy, did she show me. And I, at that point, that was probably my best match. And it was recorded, it was put on a DVD and sold around Japan and given away in Japan and stuff like that. Like they
mental.
Do like little packages and stuff where they put like a DVD and a CD and, you know, pictures and stuff and little packages for their audience and stuff. So it was crazy. And I was just so, I just couldn't believe it. I was so proud of myself. I was just so happy. And Emmy gave me loads of feedback because her biggest concern was how quiet I was, and you cannot be quiet, you cannot be a mute in a room that's that small, that doesn't echo. Like you need to be really loud. And she was like, before I went out, she goes, if I don't hear you in this room, you don't come back. And I was like, whoa, okay. And she smiled, and I went out, and I swear I was annoyingly loud. Like, I'm surprised she didn't tell me to tone it down. And I came back, and she was like, this is so good, this is very good. So nice. I was delighted. I went home, I got a McDonald's, delighted with my life. And I had training then the next day, and she was like, you know, my partner, there's a couple of sister promotions that all work together, and there was another promotion called Heat, and it's based in Kawasaki in Japan, and that would have been a venue that 01 used as well.
Right.
And they had a couple of the DDT guys on the show. You probably see them all now in Choco Pro. And she said, did I want to take part in another match? And I was like, yes. And you've actually just seen her debut on AEW. Her name's Mei.
Oh yeah, I think I know.
Yeah, she just wrestled on the first tournament, or the first bracket of the women's tournament for AEW. And she had only been wrestling about 6 months. And when I say that girl showed up knowing every single move I do, she prepared to no end. She was obsessed with the facebuster, X Factor, because it's not really used in Japan. It's more of an American kind of move. So she was like, please, please let me have this. I was like, okay. And she was like, ah, yes, yes, yes. Very excited. And then we kind of were going through the match and stuff like that. And she knew that I could do a gorilla press. And
right.
She's tiny anyway. So honestly, I looked like I was 6 foot tall in this match, which was
class.
Pretty cool, because I am 5 foot two. And I remember getting her overhead, and she was so happy because she was like, this is amazing. And then I dropped her behind me, and we had this big story that I was bigger than her and better. And she was like the small kind of, you know, terrier baby face. And we just had this really fun story, and all the DDT guys were there and helped us plan and just learn so much. Everyone's just so giving over there. Like, there's loads of different kind of, there's some rules when you get to Japan, and not a lot of people put the research in. Like, you don't show up empty handed, you know, you bring a gift, little things like that. Like, it's kind of an Irish custom as well. Like, if you go to someone's house, you bring a gift or something like that. But because she invited me over and was let me work for her and everything like that, like, I wanted to show, you know, my gratitude and stuff. So I brought her like an Irish flag, a load of gifts, and she was so grateful for that, that I took the time, you know, to look up the culture and figure out, like, you know, how things work over there. Like, not a lot of people know that you don't talk about, like, you don't talk on the trains. People don't like it. You don't talk about politics in the street. You don't drink coffee on the street. There's just loads of things that you kind of have to look up before you go over there, because you don't want to come across rude, or like, you don't care, if that makes sense. So I showed her like how much I prepared to be there and stuff. So she was just very grateful for that, and I think she just wanted to give me something back, and so I could go home, you know, and have debuted in Japan and stuff. And I remember on my last day, I was going to the G1, and during that match, she was like, the story for you tonight is that you have to finish this match as fast as possible, because you want to go see Okada win. And I was like, okay. And she was like, because you hit the Rainmaker. And I was like, oh yeah, okay. And she was like, your finish is going to be the Rainmaker,
right?
So I have me and I have her hooked, and I'm just about to spin her out, and I put my hand up and I scream Rainmaker, and it starts pouring outside, and the whole room just went and then I hit the Rainmaker and I pinned her, and like, I was the bad guy, but I got cheered because of what happened. Then
that
everyone
is amazing.
Just, Everyone just popped for it. It was amazing. And I remember when I left, everyone was like, enjoy the show, enjoy the show.
That's so cool.
And then I was in the queue for the G1, and we were going in, and people were like, oh, good game, very nice. Like, just, oh, it was so lovely. And yeah, like the whole experience was amazing. And I'll never forget it. And I hope I get to go back. I hope I'm brought over soon again. It's in talks. We don't know what the situation that's going on, but I hope to go over again and train and learn. And I suppose with the situation at hand now, we just kind of have to wait and see what happens.
Right. So let's get into the good stuff then. So for the Christmas contenders in 2018, you and Aoife Valkyrie both turned heel. Like, you were both face at this time. You turned heel and you formed the Woke Queens. How did this tag team come to be? And what was the inspiration behind the characters?
You know, it's funny because me and Valkyrie never kind of crossed paths, because she was in Germany a lot and she was on the camps and stuff. So when it happened, we were like, okay, well, is this going to be one of those things where it's like kind of like a makeshift tag team? Is it going to be like two matches and then they split us up? And to be honest, that was the direction it was going to go. They just needed more heels in the women's division, because everyone had just turned babyface for some reason. So, you know, we shot that first promo and we were thinking of like, oh, what could we call ourselves? And, you know, Aoife Valkyrie threw around a few names and she's like, well, what about VIPs? I was like, well, yeah. I was like, but we already have like MTH and all the, you know, other teams were kind of doing the letter thing.
Yeah.
And I said, I'm already called a Woke Queen. Like, what about Woke Queens? And I remember Angel Cruz shot our first promo and he was like, oh my God, that's brilliant. and I think that will work. And he's like, yeah, I really think you need to go for Woke Queens. It's different. It's, you're completely the opposite, and that's what makes it amazing. He's like, you know, you're not woke at all, you're begrudging, you're bitches, you're just mean people. And we kind of took it from there. And as we were shooting the promos, Valkyrie was very much like, you know, I want to be, you know, you're very glam and, you know, you know, put together, and I kind of want to be like this, like, not like slob, but like I want to be like, you know, the complete opposite. So it's like, you know, opposites attract, and they put us together, and I was like, okay,
yeah.
And it ended up working, because we're complete opposites in real life. And when every time we came to do a promo, nothing was ever pre-planned or scripted, because it all just kind of happened or came together on the day, which was always like the fun part of it all. Like, we'd show up with like maybe like an idea of where it was going to go if we knew what match we had, but generally it was like, you know, we'll just figure it out when we get there to shoot or whatever. I suppose the inspiration behind my character, I can't speak for Valkyrie, but I was very much obsessed with kind of femme fatale, that Russ Meyer's 60s B movie, feminine but, you know, furious kind of model type. And I was obsessed with the movie Death Proof, and I was like, I'm just going to be a badass bitch. I suppose you could kind of, you know, if Cruella De Vil and Quentin Tarantino had a love affair at the Moulin Rouge, I suppose it would be a good way to sum up who I was, the birth child of Cruella De Vil and Quentin Tarantino. yeah, and it just kind of stemmed from there, and it just kind of evolved. And then one day I was just like, I'm not tired of being a bad guy. It's just, I felt that I could offer something different or something more, as you'd say. And we decided that for our debut for Eve, that we were just going to turn it up to 11 and, you know, just not hold back on character. And they, I don't know what happened, but they just loved us. We ended up wrestling Laura DiMatteo and Roxy, Little Miss Roxy, and it was one of my favorite matches. And Session Mom Martina comes out at the end and hits us the code breaker and the Jaeger bomb, and like, it was just such a fun experience to be able to kind of be more on the comedy overacting side of things than, you know, trying to be a serious wrestler. And I suppose the characters evolved, and now especially in Eve, we'd focus more on the character stuff, and I've had some of the best matches of my career at Eve, and it's all down to not feeling like I have to hold back. It's nice to just let go and just be the character you want to be and stuff like that. Yeah.
When did you feel like everything was starting to click during this run?
I think, you know, during the Woe Queens, we had the match in Eve against Kanji and Ginny.
Right.
And I remember finding out on the day that we were wrestling the girls, and I had never really had an indie match per se up until that point. Everything was always kind of, you know, not generic or simple, but I had my stuff and, you know, this is how I did it. And Ginny and Kanji were just so accommodating and like encouraging, and they really wanted me to go all out and, you know, you do the stuff I wanted to do and not do the stuff that I thought I had to do, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I just said to Ginny, like, you know, I want to do this and this. And she was like, okay, queen, okay. And she was like, more, give me more. This is like, we're going to have fun. We're going to go all out. And we did. And honestly, it was one of the best matches. And I really started saying, you know, oh, I really like that match, or, you know, that was a good match. But honestly, this was one of my favorite matches. I personally think it's one of my best performances. And it's all down to working with someone more experienced who understands, you know, what match should play out and stuff like that. And, you know, sure enough, we went on that night to win the Eve Tag Team Championships. So we were obviously doing something right. But it all kind of started to click then. And then I had a match against Shikara in Phoenix. And that was my first sort of, you know, singles match where I went in really confident. And then I followed that up with a singles match against Sami Zayn. And I just really felt like, okay, I know who I am. I know what I want to be, what I want to do. And honestly, that kind of 2019 into 2020, was honestly my peak, I think. I don't know if we'll get back there with the way things are, but honestly, that I get sad sometimes when I think what could have happened in 2020, because I knew what my calendar looked like.
Yeah.
I knew that there was a possibility that I would have been able to leave my job and, you know, go full time, possibly, you know, might have gotten signed. I don't know. There was lots of things thrown around, and, you know, if 2020 went ahead the way it was supposed to, who knows? But I try not to dwell on, you know, what could have, should have, would have, could have. I try not to dwell on that as hard as it can be sometimes. And no, I've like had some time off. My body feels so much better.
Yeah,
I think as well, Dom, you could say this for yourself. When we first went back to training, sure, there was a couple of sessions where you were like, oh my God, I'm broken. And the first bump was like, your soul leaving your body. I genuinely think everyone was just so on point on their game and competitive. Everyone wanted to show off and like show how, like, you know, how good they are, because it's been such a downtime. That's it. And it's like, you were just like, I'm going to steal a show. This is training, but I'm going to steal a show.
Yeah.
And it was just such a good camaraderie. Everyone was just so encouraging and confident. And like Owen Richards and Andy Steele would kind of be my go-to people at training, just because, you know, we're the old people. No, I'm only messing. But Owen Richards would kind of be my rock, and I'd always go to him for like advice, or he'd come to me as well, and we kind of discuss things and see things a little bit differently. And I always loved working with Andy, because he's just really helpful and stuff like that. He's unbelievable. It blows my mind. Owen Richards and Andy Steele have not had a tryout or aren't signed. It blows my mind. I wish them that for the future, because they deserve it. 100%. Yeah. So it was amazing to be able to work with everyone again and see, you know, how the downtime really upped everyone's game, because like some of you were training 6 days a week and you know you'd be in bits and you know you'd be tired. And the break, I think, did the world of good for everyone. Like literally everyone needed a bit of downtime. And I can see by everyone's kind of checking in with each other that everyone's kind of excited to get back and stuff like that. But
So we have a good few social media questions, but before we move on to them, one thing I like to ask my guests is, once you are back wrestling, what are some goals you'd like to check off and people you'd like to wrestle?
I think I'd like to wrestle more in Europe. I'd love to wrestle for WXW. I was meant to be over in Germany a couple of times, but the dates just didn't match up for a couple of different promotions in Germany. But WXW is like where my mind is set going forward. Like I'd love to wrestle in France. I'd love to wrestle in Belgium. I'd love to go back to Japan. I'd like to, you know, go over to America if this crazy journey brings me there. In terms of people, obviously, I want to bash Killer Kelly. just want to, you know, I want to kill her. Killer Kelly is favorite people and I would love to work with her. I'd love to work with Giselle and get her back for what she did to my face. I would love to finally have my match with Emi Sakura. I think I would happily retire if I got that match. There's tons of people that I want to work with. You know, we've got our some Fight Factory trainees as well that I'd love to work with. I'd love to work with Emma Louise. I think she's unbelievable for someone who's so young. And I think, you know, she's a couple of more years and she'll be following in my footsteps. I just think she's and I remember having her debut match was me and Martin Steers versus Emma Louise and
Adam.
Why is my mind gone blank? Yes, Sharkbait Adam Farrell.
That was Dark Martin. That was amazing.
That was Dark Martin. That was honestly one of my favorite matches, have to say. And I was talking to Emma backstage and she was like, what do I need to focus on? I said, Emma, you can go out there and do all the moves. It's going to look great. But if you just add, you know, a little turn here, a look here, a reaction here, and I said, this will be perfect for you. And I remember, you flipped me over, put me in a front face, turned to the audience and gave them a wink, and the whole audience just lost it. And they were like, yeah, like she just gets the little details. And I really have such high hopes for her. I think she's going to be amazing.
Cool. So let's move on to some questions on Instagram. So we have Instagram and Twitter. The first question on Instagram, I cannot pronounce this name, but this person says, what's your ideal coffee?
I'm very plain. I love a black Americano. Sometimes at Christmas I'll get, you know, one of the toffee nut lattes or a gingerbread latte or something like that. But I'm very plain with my coffee. I don't take milk or sugar or anything like that.
Cool. Anita Vaughn from down in Phoenix, shout out, says, what's the best piece of advice you ever got, either inside or outside of wrestling?
I suppose it kind of, yeah, it is. That is a tough one. I suppose I've kind of, in a roundabout way, in all the kind of different sectors of all the many lives I've lived, I've kind of heard something along these lines, which is, if you're ever in a situation where someone is giving you feedback or someone is criticizing you or someone is, you know, reviewing a situation or something like that, and they're giving you advice and they think it's constructive, and what I was told by many people was that if you are not willing to switch places with that person that is giving you this advice, just take it on the chin. You know, you need to live your life and not take on everyone's criticism, because not everyone is right. And you know, what's meant for you won't pass you by. So if you're not willing to switch places with the person that's criticizing you, then, you know, just take it with a pinch of salt.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that. So this is an interesting one. Evan O'Rafferty wants to know, how is your NXT UK experience?
It was amazing. I was very lucky to have had a couple of weeks over there. In terms of experience, I'm not sure if he means, you know, what did I do, or, you know, how was my debut or anything like that. But working with Rhea Ripley was amazing. She's a lovely, lovely person, really genuine, really open. I showed her, she was like, oh, what do you do? And I showed her a clip of Nathan Martin power slamming me in my match where it was Woe Queens versus MTH. And I showed her this cell I did for him when he hit me the power slam.
Right.
And when I showed her, she just died laughing. She was like, okay, that's what we're doing. She's like, it's all facials and me throwing you around. I was like, do it. Let's go. Let's do it.
Nice.
And she was just really accommodating. And I laughed with her. She gave me advice afterwards. Like, she was so kind backstage. She even gave me tape to tape my gear up so that, you know, if there was like a cheeky bum shot or anything like that, that my gear would stay in place.
Right.
She was just really accommodating and really lovely. And, you know, even afterwards, she came over and she was like, did they say anything? Did they talk to you? You know, she was really, really sweet. As a whole, you know, it's an unbelievably exciting place to be. It's like a playground for wrestlers, the performance center. It's amazing. And, you know, you never know. You never know what will happen again.
Cool. Oh, I can't believe I'm reading out this question again.
Oh, God.
We had this on Low Blows as well, so that's why I'm laughing. It's a Simpsons wrestling meme says, pick any Irish wrestler and put a saddle on them so you can ride them around like a little horse. Clong has to be the right answer for this.
I feel like I'll get in trouble if I don't say Justy. you know, put a saddle on him, I'll ride him. another person would be Martin Steers, because he does the worm, the slimy worm thing. nobody else understands that at all apart from you and I. Okay, look, we'll go with Justy on that one. Thank you for that question.
don't know how he even thought of that one, like. Right. Straight face. Moving on. Joe Stodge says, where can one find the worst coffee in Ireland?
Oh, let me have a think. There is a place on Talbot Street in Dublin. It's called a Whisk. Now, the food is nice, really nice pastries.
Okay.
But the coffee would strip paint. Oh, my God. It was honestly, like, so harsh. You'd, like, get a or when you stop at a gas station or a petrol station and you go in and get a coffee and you know it's not going to be nice, but, like, you're on the road and you need to stay awake. So you get it and you're drinking it and you're like, this tastes like hot sick, like this is wild. There's loads of places, but the likes of the Whisk and Avoca in Dublin, unbelievable food, terrible coffee. if anyone is looking for nice coffee, there is a place called Bear at the IFSC in Dublin. There's a place called Square Coffee in Kildare. There's a place called Della in Galway. Listen, just tweet me. I'll tell you where to go.
Nice. Next question, and the last question on Instagram. It's Dan Manning says, if you could start your wrestling journey again, would you change anything?
That's a tough one. I think if I get started again, I'd change my attitude.
Right.
Because I think when I first kind of came in, because I was older, I was very much like, no, like I have to debut and, you know, in 6 months, and I have to be by this time, and I have to do that by that time. And it all just held me back, because you know, I may have come across like I had had a bad attitude, and that was never the case, and I never meant that to be, but I was just so, you know, focused on goals. Like, that's always the way I've been. When I came to wrestling, I was like, why is this not happening? And it's like, this is not, you know, your typical sport. This is not powerlifting. This is not football. Like, it's not about who stands out the most or who's the best or anything. It's all in good time. It's when the time is right, you know, you'll move up and you'll debut and you'll wrestle and you'll get reps. And I wish I could go back in time and enjoyed my training experience more, and I suppose not get bogged down with injuries and stuff. I've been very unfortunate with my dodgy ankle on my right leg, and I tore a tendon as well. And there was just, I got kind of in a rut, and I was not afraid to train or anything like that, but I definitely held back because I was just afraid that I'd injure it again and stuff like that. But I think if I could go back, I wouldn't have been in such a rush, because it was because of that rush that I kept getting injured. But I suppose in a way it all led me to the right place. So in hindsight, you know, maybe I wouldn't change anything. But just for me, I think I would have enjoyed the training experience a little more and not be so focused on getting somewhere.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are like that, though, when they start. Like, they see the possibility of, like, newer people getting on shows, and they're like, I have to be there. Like, I think that's a very natural thing.
Yeah, it's just, you see other people doing well and you try and rush it, and it's like, you can't rush it because it doesn't click for everyone straight away. And you know, unfortunately for some girls, and you know, you get pushed out there too soon, and you know, you get hurt, you get injured, you know, you're not ready, you know, your matches end up on YouTube, and that's your portfolio at the end of the day. So when people try and look you up and to see what you do, you've got these matches where you weren't prepared or ready. So I would just that advice in general to anybody, that, you know, don't rush it, like, enjoy it. You don't want to be Shawn Michaels straight away. Like, this is for life. If this is what you want, you're going to do for life, and there shouldn't be a rush. Enjoy the process. Sure, it's great to have badges and tick things off and work here, there and everywhere, but all in good time. It'll all work out for everyone.
Cool. So moving on to Twitter now, Chris says, we've kind of covered this already, but I'm sure we can dive in a bit more. As someone who has followed you for a few years now, it's been exciting seeing the development of your character. What are some wrestling goals going forward?
I suppose we're going to cover it. Obviously, there's loads of, you know, people I'd love to wrestle and love to work with, and, you know, promotions I'd love to work for and stuff like that. But I think, you know, the main focus for me going forward now is quality. It's right. Not about, you know, working here because it's a rep, or, you know, get the rep in, brother. You know, it's not about, it has to be quality. If we're all going forward now and work for promotions and, you know, have these amazing matches, it has to be worth it. And for me, moving forward, I'm picking quality. I don't care if that means turning down, you know, three matches, or, you know, only doing one match a month. I want quality now. I'm just at a point where I want to improve. I want to work with the best. And in order to be the best, you have to work with the best. So that's kind of my personal goal moving forward, and to start putting out more content. Like, some of the things that have gotten me through lockdown, we're doing all those skits with Carl, CT Flexer, working with Justy, working with Valkyrie when we could, when it was safe to do so. So just put more content out there, and not be afraid that it might get thrown back at you. Who cares? Yeah. Go out there and enjoy yourself. Make the content, make the promos, you know, push your brand, get yourself out there.
Cool. So next question comes from Aoife Valkyrie. And she says, ask her about her adult inflatable bathtub.
She's such a cow. So So I'm addicted to TikTok, right? And I love watching it. It just shuts my mind off. It's like mindless TV for me. I like to kind of watch funny clips that have my attention, and they're only 15 seconds long, so my attention span can handle it. So I moved, obviously, and in my house, I don't have a bath. I just have a shower. And this woman had a TikTok, and she talked about how she ordered an inflatable bath, and she put it in her kitchen, and I just randomly put in the group chat, what you think of this? No context at all. Valkyrie thought it was a paddling pool. Like, she was like, "What is that?" I was like, "That's an inflatable bathtub." She was like, "Why are you showing me this?" Out one, and she was like, "How does it even work?" I was like, "I think you have to boil the kettle and fill it up." And she was like, "Oh, what are you gonna do? Just lie in your kitchen while someone's cooking food while you have a bath?" It's like one of those things where you have a conversation in your head and you put it in the group chat and you forget that no one knows what you're talking about. And I just put in a link to a inflatable bath on in Amazon, and I never in my life have I did I expect that reaction from Aoife Valkyrie.
Brilliant. That's amazing. So last two questions then. Declan Byrne, yeah, there's two parts to this question. Apart from the obvious getting rid of abusers, what else in your opinion needs to happen to make Irish wrestling safe? And the death trap is the best submission move in wrestling. How long did it take for you to come up with it, and how long did it take for you to perform accidentally? I think we should go with the submission first.
So I came up with the submission after I came from Japan. Just they're so focused on submissions and holds over there. And I noticed that back home there wasn't a lot of people kind of doing that tech submission style. And it's something that I kind of want to incorporate because, you know, I do have a strong powerlifting background, and you know, I consider myself terms of move set and stuff, and I wanted to kind of bring more submission style into my move set. Obviously Daniel Bryan used a similar submission style, and I decided, well, what if I could hook them for a full Nelson instead, and flip over. I wonder what that would be like. And I just tried it, and I was like, okay, that's different. I want that. That's something that no one's really doing right now. So, that's kind of how it came about. Sorry, what was the rest of the question?
How long did it take for you to perform it excellently, he says.
I suppose I kind of practiced it a couple of times, but you know, you're never really gonna know how it hits. Until you do it in front of a live audience. And the first time I hit that was against Isla Dawn, in Fight Factory. I'm not 100% sure on the episode. I am terrible at
That's
this
eight, I
stuff.
think.
Episode 8. Thank you, John. And
That's why I'm here.
I remember I hit it and she tapped out instantly and I won. Everyone was just like, what the hell? What the hell? NXT UK Superstar Isla Dawn loses to Debbie Keitel, local talent. What? And then when I got the reaction, I was like, okay, I'm onto something here.
Yeah. Cool. Then the rest of the question is, what else, in your opinion, needs to happen to make Irish wrestling safe?
I think it's about time that everyone kind of joins forces now. In order for us to be safe, we all have to act accordingly. Make sure that when you're going to a promotion, that they have a medic, that they have a safe ring, that they have a safeguarding process, that they have a code of conduct. It is down to the individuals as well as it is to hold the promotions accountable. If you're gonna work for a show with no medic, you know, a boxing ring, then you know, Godspeed, best of luck to you, because obviously you don't want things to change. This is what I mean when I say that quality is better than quantity. And you can work all these, you know, these camp shows, or you know, these backyard shows, whatever you want to call them. if you're leaving injured, it is your fault because you didn't think of the safety measures for yourself, for your home promotion, for the people you work with. It is about everyone coming together now and refusing to work for these places and making sure that measurements are in place. And I think as a whole, like, people need to remember that Irish wrestling is still very new. The majority of Irish wrestlers are very young, like ranging from 16 to, you know, early 20s. And they don't necessarily understand or comprehend the severity of what's going on in the last year. And when we walk through that curtain, you can physically make sure that you're safe by making sure you have the best ring and medic, all these things in place. But when you walk back through that curtain, you are unprotected when it comes to your mental health. Mm. There's no one there to tell you, you know, there's a lot of negativity in wrestling. You know, there's a lot of this in wrestling. There's no, like, that needs to be looked at. People need to, you know, be aware that mental health in wrestling is very, very serious and very important and needs to be openly discussed. Mm. And I think the more people talk about it, the more, you know, less taboo it is. And I think there's a lot of pressure being put on people in Irish wrestling that maybe, just maybe, don't have, you know, the knowledge or the you know, the mental capacity to process it all. They don't know what to say. They don't know, you know, how to react. It's just there's a lot of pressure on Irish wrestling right now, and I think that to make sure that, you know, wrestling in Ireland in general, we should say, is safe, is the wrestlers coming together and holding these places accountable and making sure that their environments that they work in are safe.
Yep, spot on. So we're going to finish this up with the last question then. If Debbie becomes a regular on NXT UK, should have happened long ago in brackets, what would she like to do there? Perhaps a feud with Valkyrie, where Debbie could be miffed Valkyrie went to NXT UK without her, or with Ginny over who's the most stylish, or coffee versus candy with candy floss, where the loser has to consume the other's snack / drink for a month. That would be great fun. That's a really good one.
That is very good. They're all really good questions. Like, they're all good storylines. Whether or not I'd ever see anything like that happen in NXT UK, I don't know. But we are getting to see more kind of gimmick style matches. We have, like, Nina Samuels and Zaya Brookside are doing their, you know, loser becomes a personal slave or maid for a month or whatever. So, you know, it is there. The option is there, I suppose. Probably wanted to dabble in it. Obviously there's unbelievable competitors in NXT UK. I don't know why people like to push me and Valkyrie to break up because we're solid. Obviously Eva Valkyrie has her own thing going on in NXT UK, and I wish her all the best and all the luck in the world with it. Will we ever cross paths in NXT UK? Who knows? The Ginny match, I'll be all open for that match. Or a coffee versus candy match sounds amazing. There's people in there that I think are hidden gems. I think Amel is a promotion's dream. She branding, social media, her in-ring skill, her character, her just everything. She knows exactly what she's doing, and she is a force to be reckoned. I'd love to face Amel in the ring. And then you have the likes of Danny Luna and Aaliyah James, who are just getting started, who have already wowed, like, the British scene with their talent. So there's lots of hidden gems there, but you know me now, coffee versus candy probably would be the direction I'd go in.
So that's going to be the answer then.
Yeah, that's what I think I'll go with.
Cool. So that's the end for the questions. Debbie Keitel, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. I really enjoyed this episode. It was an absolute blast.
Thank you so much for having me.